Renewing numbers first, and then I'll talk about the other fast computation business in a minute. Okay, so first I'll tell you about renewing numbers. There are actually two things that you have right now about renewing numbers. I've written both slides where you talk and the section of the book about renewing numbers. And you have both of those in the handouts. Get a copy of it if you don't already have a copy of it. Okay, everybody has a copy. So the first piece of paper, or the first two pages, I guess, in some sense have the slides. And the second part has section 2.7 of the book, which is kind of like the slides, but in a lot more detail and laid out more clearly. And what I'll go over with you is the slides, but I may make some pointers to things in the book. So the motivation for considering Bernoulli numbers for us is that the Eisenstein series GK, or normalized GIVEK, these Eisenstein series give us all the level 1 modular forms. They generate all of them. And Eisenstein series has constant term BK, where BK is a kth Bernoulli number over 2K, plus Q plus some n greater than or equal to 2, sigma sub k minus 1 then q to the n. So if you normalize so that the coefficient of q is 1, then the constant coefficient is just the kth Bernoulli number divided by 2k. So Bernoulli numbers are relevant very much to study modular forms of level 1. That's the main motivation for this. And these Bernoulli numbers, piece of k, I didn't formally define them in class yet, but the definition is very easy. The Bernoulli number, more generally B sub n, are defined by equality of the following two series. Oops, here it is. So right there on the board you see the definition. Since I'll talk about these for a long time, I'll also write it on the blackboard. Over n times n. So the nth Bernoulli number is essentially just the coefficient of x to the n in the power series expansion of x over e to the x minus 1. It's not exactly that because it is n factorial. It's that coefficient, but multiplied by n factorial. Okay. So it's really big. These Bernoulli numbers are quite big, as you might guess from the factor and the factorial. These are the first few Bernoulli numbers. Let me show you a bigger Bernoulli number by using a program. So hopefully you can see that. Let me make it a little bigger. And then move it down. Sorry about this, the projection location, but okay, just to give you a sense that Bernoulli numbers can be quite large, and I will actually give you sort of a proof of this in a little bit. If you compute a small Bernoulli number, it's not that big, but even for 100, it's already a pretty big number, as you can see. That's the Bernoulli number B sub 100. Sorry, it's again sort of going off the side of the screen. Notice it has a big numerator followed by a not so big denominator right there. So again, let me move this so it's all on the screen. Okay, good. So notice that this Bernoulli number B sub 100, it has a big numerator and a small denominator. And here's another one, B sub 200. There it is. And these are exactly this factor of minus 1 over 2k. They're exactly the constant term of the normalized Eisenstein series. By the way, there's a reason for normalizing Eisenstein series this way. If you get ek by the n-tech operator, En, then you simply multiply Ek by the coefficient of q to the n, sigma sub k minus 1 of n. That's just quite simple. Normalizing this way. In any case, these Bernoulli numbers already for 200, they're quite big. And of course, you can compute bigger ones, say 500, and there it's scrolled right off the screen. Just to give you a sense, I'll take the string representation of that and then compute its length. That's just the number of letters that scroll by.
I'm at 752. Try something even bigger. How about 5,000? And 12,355. So these Bernoulli numbers have a lot of digits. They're quite big numbers. Now, from the definition, you can compute Bernoulli numbers. Anybody, even I think any random kid in your calculus class, you can probably compute some Bernoulli numbers using this. Just because, you know, one of the first things, probably the first thing you ever learned about Taylor series is the Taylor expansion of the x, and you can subtract off one, and then dividing, well, okay, it's not trivial, but it's something you can do. Yeah, I don't know, some linear, just sort of solving for undetermined coefficients or whatever. So you can compute some of these.
That's not the best way. You can write down a recurrence, which is given in the notes here. Let's see. That's right at the beginning of section 2.7. And I won't show you on the screen, but there's a nice recurrence at the beginning of section 2.7 for the Bernoulli numbers. And it's pretty simple to implement calculation of the Bernoulli numbers using this recurrence. And you get that really just by multiplying both sides by e to the x minus 1 and then just looking at what you have. And in fact, I've implemented this recurrence right here in this file, which I will make visible on the visible part of the screen in just a moment. Okay, so there's a file of code in the language Sage. And this is a complete implementation of computation of Bernoulli numbers using that recurrence. Now notice that if you want to compute Bn using that recurrence, you have to have right there in front of you all the previous Bernoulli numbers. So you might as well just compute all the ones up to B sub n. Now, let's suppose you're interested in B sub 100,000 for some reason. Just to compute all the Bernoulli numbers up to 100,000 and store them in memory would be very, very, very difficult. I actually computed them all up to 100,000 once, and it took about 4 gigabytes of disk space to store them very, very, very compressed. So probably if you expanded that out and put them in RAM, you wouldn't be able to hold it in a typical computer, or even an atypical computer. Anyways, here's a little implementation. These are the first 2 Bernoulli numbers, and then for the additional Bernoulli numbers, you just append the sum of these binomial coefficients as k varies over the range that's indicated in the notes. Now you can try this out. It works.
It's a little slow, though, because you're not really taking advantage of anything clever. You're just using a recurrence. And you know, you're sort of very wasteful in memory. But there you are. That computed using the recurrence, the Bernoulli number is up to 10. You can see how good this is, up to 100. Oops, I misspelled it. Sorry. I meant to write like that. So already going up to 100, it's taking almost a second. So, or maybe it isn't the best algorithm. It takes a while just to go up to 200, but it's not really that bad.
Yeah.
And very bad in space because the Bernoulli numbers are so big.
What time? What is that? Is that minutes?
Wall time?
Or
what is wall time?
Yeah.
See that clock? That's how much time elapsed on the clock while we ran this calculation.
And that's seconds, I guess.
Yes, and it's in seconds. Yes, sorry. So maybe this isn't so good, but it's certainly useful and not so bad either. It depends on what you're doing, whether you need something much better. But for many applications, this would be fine. So that's sort of the beginning of the story. Remember that the way that
this is something I guess I didn't get to talk to as much or talk about as much as I would have liked. But the way that you see that the constant coefficient of EK involves a Bernoulli number is you first just from the definition of the Eisenstein series, we're able to see that the constant coefficient, that is the value of the Eisenstein series at infinity, involves a special value of the Riemann zeta function. Remember, you just you take the limit as z goes to infinity and the sum of 1 over whatever, and you end up getting twice the Riemann zeta function at a given point. And the fact proved long ago by probably really, not sure actually, by somebody that the Riemann zeta function is related to the Bernoulli numbers as indicated here. So at even integers, the value of zeta is just a simple function times the corresponding Bernoulli number. Zeta at odd integers, by the way, is very mysterious. It's still very, very, very mysterious. is a theorem that is transcendental for three. Say that three is transcendental, but be a little more snow. In any case, zeta at positive even integers is given by this. And at negative integers, zeta also can be expressed in terms of Hilly numbers. So you have this formula. If you just take this and solve it for b sub n, you have a formula for the Brillouin number bn in terms of the zeta function. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a graph of the zeta function, but as n goes to plus infinity, the Riemann zeta function goes to 1.
The limit as a s goes to infinity of some 3, obviously, 1 over n ds n equals 1 to infinity is equal to 1. And it goes there pretty quickly.
So if you make s very large, well, the 1 over 1 to some large number, which is 1, plus 1 over 2 to some massive number, which is very small, plus 1 over 3 to that massive number, and so on. Basically, when s is a large positive integer, this sum is mainly just 1 plus some very, very small stuff. So the Riemann zeta function goes to 1 very quickly as the number you're putting in goes to plus infinity on the real axis. So if n were large here, say 10,000 or something, you have this number that's just about 1.0000000, and eventually you'll see some non-zero numbers, of course, very nice numbers, but, and then you have 2n factorial over 2 pi to the n. So already just looking at this and noting that zeta goes to 1 as n goes to infinity gives you a sense for how big Bernoulli numbers are. They're obviously rational numbers from the definition. The wind graph obviously rational from this. But they're basically a size n factorial. You divide it out this, but this doesn't really have much of an effect. And there's a 2 there. But basically, the size of the n Bernoulli number is about the same as n factorial. So it's huge. Very, very, very huge.
By the way, in case you've ever wondered, actually, I remember the first time I came to Seattle, I was about
6 years old, and I sat there with my scientific calculator computing factorials. I could never get beyond 69, because I was writing with my part for a part. So I was looking at what the state of the art is for computing n factorial right now, and you can compute something like 10 million factorial exactly as an integer in under a minute using the latest version of GMP, which is a C library. So just in case you've ever wondered, now you can compute 10 million factorial pretty quickly. That's what Sage uses for computing factorials. But there's a lot of...
it's just amazing that you can go that far. Okay, so you can use this though. I mean,
just look at it. So if you knew something about the denominator of b sub n, well, first, regardless of that, if you approximate zeta and approximate all these other quantities as floating point numbers, then you would get a floating point approximation to b sub n. And if, moreover, you maybe knew something about the denominator of b sub n, you could clear that denominator, and then all you'd have to do is get a floating point approximation for bn times its denominator that's good enough to determine it as an integer, and that would give you a different method to compute b sub n. And it would be completely different than using the definition or the recurrence. And fortunately, it's possible to do exactly that.
By the way, if you look at actual computer programs and wonder how quick they are at computing Bernoulli numbers, here's what you find. So if you try plugging 500, the worst one of all is Maple. It takes well over a second to compute even the 500th Bernoulli number. Maxima is a bit faster. Maxima is kind of like one of the inspirations for Maple, but it's free open source software. Magma takes 0.66 seconds, so it's a little bit better than Maxima. Gap is about the same as Magma. Mathematica is significantly better than Magma or Gap at computing the 500th Bernoulli number. And there's a website called CalcBN, and it does it a lot faster than Mathematica. And if you try Pari, our little friendly open source number theory program, it computes the 500th Bernoulli number instantaneously as far as its timings are concerned. So that's kind of impressive. You might wonder what's going on. How are these different systems computing Bernoulli numbers? And I wondered about that. If you try pushing it a little bit farther, then Maple really, really slow around 1,000. And Maxim is also quite slow. Again, the order doesn't really change at all, except Gap is a lot worse than Magma now. Mathematica takes about 1 second. And GP, again, is instantaneous out of 1,000. So what is GP doing that's different than all these other systems? By the way, a remark, Mathematica 5.2,
by the way, there's a website called with a closed source program on it that will compute this Bernoulli number in 0.06 seconds. So if you look at that website, it actually describes the algorithm, doesn't give much away of details, but the algorithm is to somehow use the Riemann zeta function and approximate it to high precision and then use a formula to infer. By the way, Mathematica 5.2, if you try to compute any Bernoulli number of 2 and including 1,000, it's very, very slow, except for the first few. And then after 1,001, it suddenly becomes very, very fast. In fact, it's about twice the time of Perry. So Perry is still twice as fast as the newest Mathematica. But for Mathematica 5.1, it was really slow for all of them. And then Mathematica 5.2 is very slow after 1,000, and suddenly gets fast. Pretty amazing.
Just an aside, the biggest Bernoulli number that's ever been computed is 5 million,
the 5 millionth number. And that was computed by O. Pavlik, and apparently for a fact, the numerator of that number is 27 million digits. There's a Sloan, if, I don't know if you know about Sloan's tables of integer sequences. There's massive, very famous tables of every integer sequence you can think of, cataloged, and searched them, and so on. But sequence number 103233 is a sequence that gives the number of digits of the 10 to the nth Bernoulli number. So people have computed the 1 millionth Bernoulli number, but not that many digits in its numerator. This one nobody's ever computed. It's twice as big as the biggest one ever computed. So if you look up that sequence at least 2 months ago, it was unknown how many digits there are in the numerator.
But you don't actually record the Bernoulli numbers that are that big in, say, Sloan's tables because they're just too big. At least the number of digits, it makes sense to record kind of for fun. Here's a fun observation I made when I was preparing this talk a while ago, about a month and a half ago, I gave a version of this talk.
Actually, there's a formula for the denominator, the nth Bernoulli number. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. But there it is. It's due to Clausen and von Schout. And it tells you it gives you a very simple formula for the exact denominator of the Bernoulli number. There's no cancellations, just this is the denominator of the Bernoulli number of b sub n. You just take, that n should be n, by the way. You take the product of the primes with the property that p minus 1 divides the Bernoulli number, divides the n. Take the product of all those, that is the denominator of the nth Bernoulli number. It's very simple. So at least the number of digits of the denominator is something you can easily figure out. But you can just figure out the exact denominator. And you can compute this even if n is quite large. All it requires is factoring n. By quite large, I mean 10 million, like that. So
I actually implemented this denominator formula, which was very easy to implement. Let me show you. I'll use this expose thing. So, see, there's this function burn denominator, and the code is this. Basically, the entire code is this one line right here.
The rest is just documentation in some special cases. And to compute the denominator of the nth Bernoulli number, take the product over d plus 1 for d in the divisors of n. And where d plus 1 is prime. So remember, before you're taking product over primes p that divide of p, p minus 1 divides and taking the prime. So whenever you have a divisor and p and 1 plus it is prime, then you throw that into the product. So it's just a very simple formula that gives you the denominator of the nth Bernoulli number.
So we can try this out here. So burn something. Is there something? This is only valid for the
zero.
Yeah. Actually, the top, this one of the special cases is for odd ones. I think it returns one. But maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I don't remember. You're right. It's out of denominator of two. It's amusing. So you can take, you know, your favorite Bernoulli number, like 10 to the 5th, and it just sort of almost immediately spits out the denominator. So even the next thing in that table, which wasn't known 2 months ago, the denominator's 10 to the of that Bernoulli number is just given there. So it's very, very quick and easy to compute denominators of Bernoulli numbers. Okay. Now back to this slide.
So sort of a simple observation, the number of digits of a number is you take log base 10 of that number and then take the ceiling. Gives you the number of digits of the number in base 10. So, for example, 87 log base 10 of it, whatever it is, but anyways, it's true. It's just a log's work. So actually, if you could just compute log base 10 of the denominator times bn, that would give you the number of digits of the numerator. So, amusingly, you just use this formula. Log of Bernoulli number is log of 2n factorial over 2 pi to the n zeta, because bn is equal to, up to sine, 2n factorial over 2 pi to the n times zeta. They just use properties of logs to expand this out. Here you have log of zeta of n. Remember, zeta of n is 1.00000000000. So log of zeta of n is essentially zero. It has a very, very significant contribution, which, think about the precision you need to compute this in order to figure out the number of digits. You just need to know this number to enough digits. So if you're trying to describe something that has to say, well, I mean, the resulting number is going to have maybe 8 or 9 or 10 digits. You only need to do this to precision of about 8 or 9 or 10 digits. So then you can figure out exactly what precision you need. But this is just zero to that precision. So just using this formula right here, you can quickly put the next few entries in Sloan's tables. And in fact, if you think a little bit harder, the only term in this formula that's hard to compute is this right here. Because n is huge, so you have this massive sum. But in fact, there's a simple formula for log of
n factorial. Or more generally, there's a simple formula for log of gamma of z, where gamma is the gamma function. And it's called Stirling's formula.
Amusingly, it involves Bernoulli numbers. And here it is. So, log of gamma of z, now because z is being, say, n plus 1, so you have 1 over log of 2 pi is like 10 digits of precision, this to a couple of digits of precision, and this sum very quickly, this turns very, very quickly go to 0, because after all, this z is like a million or something. So you just compute a couple of Bernoulli numbers, and you can approximate very precisely log of gamma z. And you're always adding on positive transfers. So anyways, you can compute the denominator, I mean, compute the number of digits of bn quite easily using this.
And again, I implemented this to show you. And here it is, Bern number of digits. And let's see, here's the, this is the whole program right here. Make sure. Oh, there's a little bit more. So it computes the number of bits it's going to need, and it then computes the various terms involved in that sum, and then at the end, right here, as long as the terms you're adding on are greater than zero to the precision you're working, you add on additional terms. If you add on infinitely many additional terms and they're all zero to the precision you're working, certainly you're going to get zero, but no additional contribution.
So you do have to be careful about adding on too many terms. It serves actually diverge if you add on, you kept going forever.
Well, but they're all zero to the precision I'm working, so we just keep adding on zero.
Those Bernoulli numbers blow up too fast in a very long time.
Okay. I'll trust you. But not quite sure I understand the issue.
It's an asymptotic series. It actually then the whole series diverges for all z. But,
oh, I didn't do that. Oh, interesting.
If I knew there was no passive exponential.
But so how does this work? You're right, these get very, very big. Really mystified. I don't understand Stirling's formula at all now. But apparently you do. Do you say more?
if we truncate at any point, then multiply the remainder by appropriate power z, that would go to zero. That'll go to zero as you go.
Okay.
You take a reasonable number of terms, it's very good. Too many terms, it blows out.
Very interesting. I stupidly didn't know that, but you're obviously right. Oops. Thank you for pointing that out. So I'll add it into the text for the book. Thank you. So it just points out that actually this divergence is pretty stupid, but if you take a massive number of terms, it actually diverge. Since these p's are huge, eventually they dominate the body. So it's quite interesting. I never really thought about that.
In any case, in practice, you can use this to extremely quickly approximate log of gamma z. Amazingly enough, it's extremely disturbing. And I need to think about that somewhere. So I plead that I came up with this with some input from Stark, so I haven't thought it through as carefully as I would have liked. Now I'll demonstrate it for you. So there's one of the entries in the table. If we go back to the other table. So 4767554. 4767554. We can also do 10 to the 7th as the next missing one, and 10 to the 8th. And you notice it's quite quick. 10 to the 11th. Of course, after a while it gets slow because you're factoring and stuff, but it's really not that bad. So you can get lots and lots. You can tell how many digits there are in the numerator of the numbers. I think I'll basically skip this. This is just to say that if you look all over the web, as far as I can tell, there aren't any tables of Bernoulli numbers of any interest at all. There are a whole bunch of papers from like the late 19th, early 20th century with the title containing the words table of Bernoulli numbers. There's at least three that I was able to find. But for some reason, I couldn't find any modern tables. So I ran a computer and it computed them all up to 100,000. So I computed every single one. But then the computer broke when it was being shipped here. And the only copy of the tables is in that computer. So hopefully when the computer gets fixed, all of these tables again can do something with them. Another approach to this whole problem is something that Joe Beeler and several other people did. It's related to understanding class groups of cyclotomic fields, or its close connection between Bernoulli numbers and class groups. And they wanted to compute Bernoulli numbers, absolutely massive number of Bernoulli numbers, say b sub, say a billion, that kind of that order of magnitude, but only modulo small prime, or medium-sized prime. So to do that, the whole issue of the numbers getting really big disappears, and it turns out, essentially, up to some slight refinements, the best way is to go back to this and do everything modulo prime. But there's one very clever trick that they introduced, which nobody has done before in this paper I'm alluding to, which is that if you have a power series, you can compute 1 over that power series pretty quickly using Newton iteration. In other words, if you have an approximation g to the inverse of some power series, then if you let h be twice g minus f g squared, then the result is twice as good of an approximation. So you just iterate this a couple of times, and you get an amazingly good, or you get a very, very fast way of computing 1 over e to the x minus 1. So it's pretty easy to compute e to the x minus 1, you can compute 1 over it. And that's what really takes the time. But then using the iteration, you can make it very fast. So if you're interested in Bernoulli numbers by p, they've really by far done the most. And actually, Joe is still doing stuff related to this right now. I taught a course last year, and I gave a student project, which was to figure out why, if you go back here to the table, why is Paris absolutely killing all the other systems at computing Bernoulli numbers? What does it do that the other systems don't? And I asked the student, I had no idea myself, and he told me, and in particular, here's a snippet of the
source code of Pari, it's it calls various functions that are not in this piece of code, but this is basically what Pari does to compute Bernoulli numbers quickly. And the documentation is pretty dense for Pari, and there's actually a few comments, namely that it's faster, that it uses correspondence stop somehow. And then there's this mysterious constant. I don't tell you at all where it comes from, but it's just somehow the precision decision. And the amazing comment about what this constant is it equals question mark, question mark, question mark. So Karim Balabash presumably knows what that constant or why that's there, since he wrote this bit of code, but I haven't extracted it from him. So.
But that's it. Of course, what does that say? What does that mean? How does it work? What is it really doing? Here's some more code. If you sort of investigate one of the crucial functions in the other code,
it ends up computing the Euler product. It computes the zeta function via the Euler product. And the code is given explicitly right here. This is the Pari C library code stuff.
But really, what is going on here? How do you do this? So the rest of slides that I'll show you are about precisely what you do and sort of what's going on. If you look at the notes, it goes a little bit further, and there's a provably correct algorithm that allows you to compute the Bernoulli numbers. So it gives provable bounds that on the number of factors you have to use in the product and so on. That's not done in the Pari source code, and the bounds we have look a little different than that. So if you use Sage or Pari to compute a Bernoulli number, you might worry that it's using some bounds that some guy just figured out in the middle of the night when he was hacking some code. But you can instead look at what's in the notes and use this instead, and you'll be more confident. Sorry about my voice. So by the way, this idea to compute Bernoulli numbers via special values of zeta is something that seems to have been arrived at independently by at least three different sort of groups of people all at about the same time. So Henri Cohn and Karim Balabash thought of it, this guy Bill Daly thought of it, and there's also, there's a website called www.bernoulli.org, and yet a fourth person who maintains that website completely independently and not acknowledging anybody else also came up with this method. And moreover, in another place, it's in Maxima, in the documentation for Maxima, it says it uses this. But I don't think it actually works or works anymore. In any case, now let me tell you what it does. So, here's the guy with the Bernoulli.org page. His name is Bernd Kellner. Okay, so here's the algorithm. Just a sequence of steps.
So first you set k to be 2n factorial over 2 pi to the n. And k you have to compute to some big precision, big enough to determine the numerator of the Bernoulli number. And you can find out what precision you need, for example, using what I showed you before about how to compute the number of digits of the Bernoulli number. So you compute k, that's not too hard. The hardest part is maybe computing 2n factorial and also pi to large precision, but those are standard things. You compute the denominator of the Bernoulli number using the Clausen von Staudt theorem, which tells you the denominator is the product of certain primes, exactly those primes where when you subtract one from the prime, you get a divisor of the number. Third, you compute this bound capital N. This just tells you how many primes you need to use in the Euler product in order to approximate zeta of N to sufficient precision in order to recover the Bernoulli number. And this bound right here, you get via comparing the Euler product to the infinite sum representation of the zeta function, and then using the integral method from your calculus course to bound the error in an infinite sum, you just use that, compute the appropriate integral, this is what comes out. And again, the exact details of that are in the notes. So then, after knowing how many primes you need, you can get all the primes up to that bound, which you can do all this instantaneously compared to some of these other things using the sieve of Eratosthenes, for example. Then you can get this product. I think that's probably the hardest part, is computing this product efficiently. In my implementation, by far, this step dominates everything computing the product. And then finally, you multiply d, k, and z together. Multiply this, that, and that. And the result is, up to sign, exactly the numerator of the nth Bernoulli number. So you can recognize it as an integer just taking the ceiling. since you've computed everything to sufficient precision, and you've ever so slightly under-approximated the Bernoulli number, because you're using an Euler product and you're truncating, you're leaving off some factors. So then you get this Bernoulli number out. And again, I'll show you an implementation of this.
Okay, so it gets a bound on the number of bits of precision that are needed to do the calculation. It computes the factorial thing. It's k. It's d. Computes I called it m instead of n here. The number of primes in your Euler factor. Then it computes the Euler product, and it multiplies these three numbers together, and it outputs a over d. This is exactly like what I put up on the board. And again, all that's really going on here, as you're using that zeta of n and b sub n are related in a simple way. And if you want to compute b sub n, you compute instead zeta of n to very, very high precision. That's all that's going into this. Now let me demonstrate this for you. Oops. So that's just called Bern analytic. So you give it a number, and let's see, verbose equals true. And it, it's using 5 bits of precision. It computes the K, the D, the M, and computes the Euler product as an approximate real number. And then it computes the product of all of them, and gets the numerator, and then it truncates. Try a bigger example, say 50. And so it's using 135 bits of precision. The k to that many bits of precision is given here. The denominator is again 66. Uses 4 terms for the Euler product. It gets this as the approximation for zeta of 50. Remember, it's 1 point lots of zeros and then some interesting stuff. And then it multiplies everything together. It gets this very close to an integer. It takes the ceiling. It gets the Bernoulli number. And then we can check that this agrees with what Perry gives. And there you are. Now you can try a bigger one, say 1,000. And it took 0.09 seconds, which is a lot better than Mathematica's 1 second. And this is these are all the numbers it sort of computed along the way. But they're pretty big. So that's it. That's how you can efficiently compute Bernoulli numbers much more efficiently than what's done in a lot of the software out there. And I think this is a general trick which you can use in more situations than just Bernoulli numbers. Anytime you have some algebraically defined quantity, and you can relate it to an analytically defined quantity, you can ask yourself, is there a way to compute one or the other much more quickly than I already know? And this is one illustration of that. And one situation related to this that isn't completely worked out is generalized Bernoulli numbers. Just say a word about in a second. Let's see. So,
this is just a foreshadowing to later topics of this course, but if you have a Dirichlet character, which is a map from Z mod and Z to C, which when you put a star here, if you restrict it to the group of units of the ring Z mod and Z, then it's a homomorphism of groups to C star. If it starts, it's a homomorphism of groups. And it's supposed to be zero, and anything isn't copart to N. Then, very similar to the definition of Bernoulli numbers over there, you have these generalized Bernoulli numbers, where the characters in it, and the definition is just, again, similar. These are very relevant if you consider the analog of the Riemann zeta function, but twisted by a character. And computing piece of n chi efficiently can probably be done using an analytic, but nobody's really implemented that yet.
So Kevin McGowan, who I did a lot of this work with, has a preliminary implementation that we've tried out. So it is possible to do this using this analytic method. And doing this is relevant for computing things about p-adic L functions, because p-adic L functions interpolate this. See, so later in the course, not too much later,
I'm going to talk about generalizations of this Eisenstein series to higher level, to gamma 0 event, gamma 1 event. And it turns out that there they are. These are the generalized Eisenstein series. They're given again completely explicitly, and they involve Dirichlet characters. And to compute them, you have to compute generalized Bernoulli numbers very quickly. And so, the
All right, so I think that is everything I want to say about Bernoulli numbers. Again, there's more in the way of details in the notes. And now I'm going to talk about some other things. So are there any questions before I stop talking about Bernoulli numbers? Okay.
Not the first few sentences.
It's not the same writing.
Yeah. So we're almost done with chapter 2, which is level 1 modular forms. And just the last thing I want to tell you about is Midas conjecture, which I really didn't get to say much about it last time. But Midas conjecture says that you consider SK side of MK, so it's based on weight of weight k plus forms of level 1, then well, remember last time I defined half operators T sub n, but let's just consider T2 for a moment, and they act on SK, and might try computing them. For example, you do in your homework assignment, if you want to know. And you can factor the characteristic polynomial of T2. And in every example you try, you'll discover that, in fact, the characteristic polynomial is irreducible. In fact, my other conjecture is that the pure poly of T2 is irreducible. In other words, a little bit of a slightly weaker statement would be that SK as a module over the Heck algebra is irreducible. This is even stronger, it's saying just as a module over the ring generated by T2, it's already irreducible. So this is a conjecture. As far as I can tell, nobody really has any idea how to prove it. It does actually have some interesting relations to special values of L functions, which I hope to say something about later. I really wouldn't be appropriate. So this pure poly of T2 is an explicit polynomial. It's computed. And it's a really big polynomial. And for some weights, I don't remember how many, if you look at the first paper Kevin Buzzard ever wrote, it was about looking at the Galois group of this polynomial. So in a whole bunch of cases, he showed the Galois group was a full symmetric group, which is sort of what you expect for a random reducible polynomial. But you might more generally conjecture that that's the case. I think David Farmer and somebody else computed enough about these curve polys to wait 2048 to show this conjecture is true, up to 2048. So that's really good evidence for this. For any k up to 2048, this is in fact irreducible. I also computed the curve polys up to 3400, but I did it using a multi-modular method. I computed the curve poly mod a number of primes, and when it stopped changing, when I computed a mod more primes using the Chinese remainder theorem, so we're lifting to zero, characters to zero. When it stopped changing for five separate moduli, then I just declared that the Kerr poly. That's not provably correct by any means. But I computed them up to 3,400, and then I had a student send them to a project verifying that they're irreducible, and he did verify that. So, assuming, at least slightly heuristically, this is true for k up to 3,400. So, seems pretty likely to be true. And the analog of it, if you consider Petrov operators on pieces like this, is completely false. For a larger n, this can be, is typically split up a lot. But for level one, very strangely, no splitting up at all, according to this conjecture of Maida. So the main point of this is that it's a completely open conjecture that you can already understand, given what I've told you already, of course. But it's not a completely trivial statement at all.
Has anyone looked at the other Heck operators?
Probably they all.
T3.
I haven't thought about that, but I would suspect every single one. I mean, either the thing is irreducible or it's a constant. Because if it's somewhere between the two, then it would factor. So I suspect that, I'm just coming up with this on the fly, but I would suspect that the curve probably every TP is irreducible. I've never been able to conjecture that. It's a good question.
Well, I was just wondering if computations happened that way.
No. And a very interesting computation would be to take weight 24. Because there, weight 24 is the first case where. Okay, so here's an exercise. Let's take S24. I'm curious, or Ross curious. Consider the Heck operator's TP on this group. T equals 2, 3, et cetera, up to, I don't know, let's choose an arbitrary cutoff. 144, 169. And I'll stop in 10 seconds. Is the Kerr poly of TP irreducible for every single one of these, or are there some p's for which it's not? In each case, the Kerr poly is a degree 2 polynomial. Is it irreducible in every case? That's sort of your question, isn't it? And if it's irreducible in every case, it might be that every Kerr poly has a reducible, is irreducible. If it's not, then, well, that might be the rest of it. So, all right, so I'll stop there, and we'll start fresh next time on whatever it says we're starting on next, which I think is modular symbols, or higher level, actually modular symbols at all. Okay, so I'll see everybody on Monday. And again, I apologize for my voice, which is probably bugging me more than you.